Okay, may I talk in English again? Last Friday I talked in English too. Who was here last Friday? No one? And none of you. Were you?
I wasn't.
No. There were a lot of people, but none of you were here.
A capo.
Huh?
A capo.
No, it was Monday. Oh no, there was a lot of people, but I spoke in English again because there was someone.
Et Michel Ange, mais parle français.
Ah, tu étais là pendant les journées?
Mm-hmm.
Oui. Yes. There was someone who didn't. Who was it?
Michel Ange, Patrick,
Kathleen. Speak French. Anyway. It will come to me. I will remember. I heard on the radio, I forget which day, but there was a report about the Dalai Lama being here in France this week, and that and the story that the president, François Hollande, was not receiving him because the Chinese put a lot of pressure. And I think even No, that was it. He was still going to Sciences Po, though, and then Sciences Po refused to. There had been a lot of pressure put on Sciences Po not to let him. It's a famous political science institute, and there had been pressure put on them not to receive him, but they went ahead with it. Some conference he was giving was taking place there, and they. Do you know about this? No, or maybe it wasn't this. Maybe it was another time when he was here. Anyway, and so on the radio they had this report. They went to the pagode in the Bois de Vincennes and talked to people who were there, practitioners who were there. And they had, the typical Tibetan Lama Gyoba singing in the background, and the bells and all this stuff. And after that, they had interviewed Fabrice Midal, who's a guy who teaches Buddhism here, teaches meditation in France, and he was really upset. He said, "What really bothers me about you." Report is that you do all this kind of folklore music and peace and love, and you make a big deal about the fact that François Hollande is not receiving about Dalai Lama, but in fact that's not at all what the Dalai Lama is about, and that you completely miss the point. He was like, really? I was glad that he was. Completely missed the point of what the Dalai Lama's message is, and that Dalai Lama really doesn't care if François Hollande receives him or not. And that's not what he comes here for. And all of this, thinking that Buddhism is about all this nice music and lamas chanting and bells ringing and things, is to miss the whole message. And he said, and then they asked him something about, well, what is it? And he said, well, what changed my life was what it's about, and it's what changed my life was about sitting down and doing meditation and changing your perspective on life through that. It doesn't matter about the bells and the nice music and meeting the president and all of this stuff. Anyway, why I was thinking about that, and I was wondering, you know, if people heard that report, how they received what he was saying, Fabrice Midal. And I think it was that same night, that same day when I heard that. I think it was probably Wednesday, because then I came here that night. And on the way, I had left very early from my house because I had to buy flowers. And I didn't think that Joa would be here because he couldn't come for some reason. And I knew that everyone else had told me they weren't coming, so I wanted to be here early to be sure that someone was here if someone came, right? And so just when I went down into the metro, they announced on the loudspeaker that the traffic was interrupted on the train on line 9 because there had been what they call an accident grave de voyageur. And the train pulled in at that time, pulled up to the quay anyway, so we could get in. And I happened to be at the head of the train, so the conductor was there. And I said to him, so they just announced that there's no traffic, but is that true, you know? Because it was on the thing, it said 1 minute or something, you know? And he looked really flustered, the conductor. He looked kind of like shaken. And he said, yeah, there's just been an accident. He said, there's just been a suicide at Strasbourg-Saint-Denis, which is this the station on this line. And it just happened right now. And so the trains won't be running. Or there will be, this train will go as far as it can. I will take it as far as it can. I said, so how, you know, like, I was afraid he would say Porte de Montreuil, because that's kind of a disaster if you get to Porte de Montreuil. There's no way to get to Nation, you know. And he said, no, we'll probably get to Nation. So I was like, okay, fine. You know, if I get to Nation, I can walk from Nation. No big deal. But he looked really shaken. You know? So we got on the train, and then as we were going, he kept announcing new things, and we got to the Porte de Montreuil. And he said, no, they've cut the electricity on the line, so it would be until 8:30, and this was like 10 after 7. So I were advising everyone to get off here, take the tramway. If you need to get to Nation, you can take the tramway to the Porte de Vincennes and then go to Nation, or you can get on there and then get to Nation and take the other lines, or you can take the tramway and the other way. They were telling us to take the tramway, basically. And he said, they said it might be as quick as 20 minutes we could leave from here, but probably more like an hour. So I'm thinking, I'm not going to sit here for an hour making this train. So I took the tramway and did the whole thing and got to Nation and then took a bus and ended up getting here at like 8:05 when I had intended to get here at like 7:20, you know. And all along the way, having encounters with people, and everyone was in the same situation. A lot of people were complaining. It was very hot. It was really hot that night still. I had my flowers, I had my bag, you know, it was crowded. People were helping each other, trying to figure things out, whatever. There were all kinds of, you know, things that happened on the way. All the while, I was feeling so devastated by the fact that this person should throw themselves in front of a train. I was really affected by it, because usually they say accident grave de voyageur. You don't know what it is. Everybody thinks it's a euphemism for suicide, but you don't really know if that's what it is. It could be anything, you know. It could be somebody who got their hand stuck in the door, or, you know, who knows what it is. Pretty much you think that it's suicide. But this time, the guy just said to me, then after that, on the intercom, they didn't say that. They just kept announcing accident grave. But the guy just said right out to me, there was a suicide, it just happened, it's Strasbourg-Saint-Denis. I don't think it was his train, because I don't think he would have been there if it was, but maybe he knew the guy who it was the conductor. He probably heard it. I mean, he heard it. The guy probably went on and the radio and maybe was in the train so they could talk. I don't know, but he clearly was shaken by it. And I think that brought it home to me, too. And thinking, wow, what is this? What is happening in that person? What happened in that person's life that would bring them to that? Because that's a really, you know, violent thing to do. And then to see the effect that it had, to feel the ripples, you know, you throw a rock in the water, and the ripples go out. I was being affected by this person's life. Everyone else who I met was being affected by this person's life and death. We all were having these interactions with each other. A lot of people were angry, not thinking at all, probably, about that person's life and death. And then I started thinking about that person's family, how they're being affected by it, and then how then their lives will be, and how the people they're in contact with will be affected. And the conductor of the train, I think that is one of the biggest fears of a conductor of a train, is that that will happen. Whether it's a, you know, chemin de fer or a metro or something. The pompier, the firemen who had to come and deal with it, were affected. And then, you know, it's horrible to say, but I'm sure that there are cleaning crews that have to come and deal with it. And there are people who are trying to deal with the traffic and shut down the electricity and decide when it can start up again, and they have to do something with that train. And it's unimaginable, the effect, the result of that act. And karmically, what that means. And I thought, wow, you know, this is what the Dalai Lama is about. He's not about seeing President Hollande. He's about seeing this, seeing about the interconnection of life and the importance of every single act, every moment, every breath, everything. And the effects every act, every breath, every movement has on everything. I mean, that person's life and death is influencing right now your life, because I'm sitting here talking about it. I talked about it on Wednesday when I came here with Guillaume and Joa, who were here, but I was still kind of in the throw of it, and I didn't give a talk that night. But and we just never know, you know. And then I think that same day, maybe the next day, my husband told me that he had received a letter, actually an email, from someone who he had had as a student, like, in 1987 or something like that. Like 30 years ago. Who had found his address because she is a university professor now. And she met someone who my husband works with, and he put her in touch with him. So, you know, my husband hadn't thought of this woman since she was in Terminal 30 years ago. And she wrote him this long, 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 like 4 pages of letter, telling him all these things about how important he had been to her, when she was a student, and how that had affected her, and what had happened in her life, and citing incidents that there had been when she was in his class. And she was in the section ES, and he was a French, he was a French professor, and she wanted to go to study medicine, and everyone told her she couldn't do it. Her professor, other teachers, her parents, her whole family told her she couldn't do it, that she should do something else, you know. Except Anna, who said to her, "You can do it. If you want to do it, do it." You know, because she said this had been her dream since she was a small child. He didn't really remember this, but she told him in the letter, and she had gone on. She went to medical school. She became an agrégée in medicine, and now she teaches in the Faculté de Médecine in Montpellier. And she wrote to him, telling him all of this, that he had no idea about. And he remembered her, but he didn't remember, he remembered telling her too that if she wanted to go to study medicine, she should, you know, but he didn't remember the rest of it, and so even incidents she told and things that had happened, whatever. We just don't know, you know? And that's, these are just like, this is a tiny little glimpse of the interconnection, the interdependence of things, and the cause and effect that an action, just saying to this woman, if you want to study medicine, do it. For him, for Alain, that was probably, he probably really believed that. Or he saw what kind of student she was and thought, well, yes, of course, if she wants to study medicine, why not? You know, she shouldn't listen to some thing that, you know, in the French school system, they really have you, like, in a path from the age of 10 to study this or that, you know. And I think he really didn't believe that, in that. I don't possibly because he was, you know, a practicing meditator for many years at that point, and so he had a different perspective on things. Coming back to what Fabrice Midal said, well, what changed his life was sitting down and looking into this and meditating. I say sitting, I say sitting rather than meditate, but, and that changes everything. And I still wonder, I still think about this, whoever this person was who committed suicide on Wednesday night. I've been thinking about that person since Wednesday, and I feel so devastated by it. Someone should come to that point in their life. And at the same time, that's absolutely their path. No? It's not that they should have done that or shouldn't have done it. Who's to say if that was right or wrong? All I can say is my experience and the consequences of it, and my appreciation for life, and how that makes me feel when I think someone doesn't appreciate life in the same way. But I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
C'est son chemin, c'est ça que tu dis. C'est son chemin.
C'est ça. I don't know what that is. I don't know what happened. And I don't know what the consequences are for the family, if there were children, if there was a husband or a wife, parents. I don't know. I know two people who have had something happen in their family and have been deeply affected by it. And you know, that's I know what they've experienced as being a member of the family when a sibling has done that. So. But even if you look, so those people, who one of them is my darling brother Frank, whose sister committed suicide like that, I never knew that woman. I never knew his sister. I didn't even know him at the time when that happened. But her life and death affected me. There was some consequence from her life and death on my life. And certainly, other people that I'm not even aware of have had effects on my life. And I've had effects on the lives of people, some people, I don't even know. Someone, you know, I was in the bus, it was very crowded in the bus, and I was holding the flowers, and I was holding them down like this so it could be, so it wouldn't take up so much room. And there was this woman in front of me, and she turned around like this. And I said, yeah, it's flowers. And she said, oh, she quite stinks bit. Because she could feel it on her leg, like the leaf on her leg. And so we had this little exchange. We were completely involved with one another at that moment. It lasted, you know, 10 seconds. But we were completely together in that moment. That would not have happened if that woman hadn't committed suicide, or man committed suicide. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's a consequence. And how many other exchanges did we have, you know? I mean, I'm waiting for the bus at Nation and someone's trying to get to the Mairie de Montreuil, and I explained to him, there's no way from here, you know? There's no way to get to Mairie de Montreuil from here. You can get to the Porte de Montreuil. There's a bus that goes there. But there's no way to get to the Mairie de Montreuil from Nation, which is a big problem for those of us who live at Mairie de Montreuil, because every time there's a problem with that line, we're stuck. How many times have I walked to Vincennes or walked to Porte de Montreuil? Because there's no other option. So I wouldn't have met that man, even though I didn't meet him, you know. I mean, but I did. I wouldn't have stood in that spot waiting for that bus. I wouldn't have been on the 56 bus, which I never take that way. When I used to take it the other way, going from Nation to somewhere else, but I never took that one. So, whatever. You get the message, I think. You see. And it's all about not becoming fixed. This is what the Dalai Lama is about. Not becoming fixed. Or becoming unfixed, let's say. Letting go of our perspective on me. And then you, and then this, and that. That's about it. It's what Trungpa called panoramic awareness, which, you know, it sounds pretty daunting, but it really is just in this moment. It's not like something that's forever and ever. It's just in this moment, opening. And as Fabrice Midal pointed out on the radio, the Dalai Lama is not coming here to, I forget what the journalist's question was. It was kind of something about, you know, I forget what it was, but he said his answer was something to the effect of, well, the Dalai Lama doesn't come here to make people Buddhists. He doesn't, that's not what his point is. And he even says that. He said, I don't want you to become Buddhists. Whatever your tradition is, if you have a practice of some sort, whatever you do, just keep doing it. But his message is, open your heart. Open. You know? Another example we often give is that, okay, the Chinese invaded Tibet. Everyone thinks it's a horrible thing, right? And it is. It's an incredibly violent, abusive situation. But had they not invaded Tibet, nobody would even have heard of the Dalai Lama. Nobody would have even cared about the Dalai Lama. And there would be no Tibetan Buddhism practiced all over the world today. It was really, really closed society, Tibet, and nobody went anywhere, except maybe occasionally to India or to Nepal or Bhutan or something. But Nobody went anywhere. But because the Chinese invaded, everybody had to leave. All of the lamas, all of the great monastic teachers, whatever, they all left. And they went out into the world. And they brought their teachings with them. And it meant that these teachings became available all over the place. It's taken, let's see, when the Chinese invaded Tibet in 1949, I think, something like that. And the Dalai Lama left in 56 or 57, something like that, wasn't it? And so that's, you know, that's 60 years ago. It's taken a long time, but it's gone like that. And, you know, there's a Tibetan legend that says, said something like, the teachings of the Buddha will reach the West when the iron bird flies, or something like that. I don't know what it was, something like that. And, or I can't remember what it was, but it's something that was a prophecy of what actually happened. So here we are with the Dalai Lama. So the consequences of this, you know, what is considered a tragic invasion and a tragic situation of destroying Tibetan culture in Tibet and whatever, has actually brought these teachings to a far wider audience and benefited millions and millions and millions of people, and even more people than are aware, because a lot of people are aware of who the Dalai Lama is. He's become just something that everybody knows about. You know, they don't really know what he does, but everybody knows about the Dalai Lama, and they have a very, most people feel very fondly about him. It seems like he's very well-meaning and peaceful and funny and does no harm, and general public, if you did a survey, would probably approve of him, you know. Well, so he's having an effect. The consequences of that Chinese invasion are having this amazing effect, which we could not have done otherwise. And this is not to say, you know, it's like Norman Fisher the other night was saying, this is not to say that, oh, everything is happy and good and we should be happy about everything. It's not to say that everything is good at all. It's just to say that look at the consequences. Look at what is and see, open your perspective beyond just me. So a lot of these people were just focused on me, that the train was disrupted and I couldn't get where I wanted to go. And I had to go out of my way, and I had to take a tramway, and I had to take a bus, and it was really annoying, and it happens all the time. Not again, it's like this every night. People complaining, you know. They were just me. It was just me. The next morning, when I got on the train to come back here, at this time it's 7 o'clock in the morning, so 12 hours later, I come back, and they announced again that the trains were being delayed because of accident grave de voyageur. And I don't know if it was the same, if it was still delayed 12 hours later. You know, maybe it was so disrupted that it took that much time to get it back going, or if it was another accident grave. I don't know. Whatever it was, didn't affect my train. So the train I was on was not late. So there also might have been people Wednesday who wanted to come here and sit and who didn't come because the line 9 was disrupted. I thought of that too, you know. And that's the line you would take to come here. I don't know. So, what are the immediate consequences of this, what I'm saying? I mean, what are the What are the effect on you of hearing this? So now you've been affected by this person who committed suicide. What happens for you now? This is another way of asking, does anyone want to say anything?
Je connais quelqu'un qui est directement Laure, que tu connais, une de ses meilleures amies. Une de ses nièces, qui était étudiante à Polytechnique, s'est allongée sur la voie du train, avant que le train ne passe.
Attends, Laure, sa nièce?
Non, la nièce d'une meilleure amie de Laure. La nièce d'une très bonne amie de Laure, okay. Qui était étudiante à Polytechnique. Polytechnique, c'est une grande école d'ingénieurs d'État. Enfin, peu importe. Enfin, non, pas peu importe. Elle s'est allongée sur les rails pour mourir. Et une semaine après, il y a une autre étudiante de cette école qui a fait la même chose. Voilà.
C'est récent?
Oui. C'était avant l'été, au mois de juin. Allongée sur le train, sur les rails, à se jeter, c'est terrible, mais quoi ?
Ça revient
oui,
même.
Mais tu te rends compte, se jeter, il y a une impulsion au moment où s'allonger en attendant que le train arrive. Quelle détermination à mourir, c'est. Et donc, quelle impossibilité de vivre, certainement. Et j'en sais très peu, mais que personne, dans ce que j'ai dit, soit dans la famille, dans les autres étudiants, dans les professeurs, personne n'avait un indice d'un problème. Comment ?
D'un si profond mal-être.
Oui, mais même, oui, et même pas d'un mal-être, quoi. Donc voilà. Et effectivement, régulièrement, dans le métro, on entend ça quand même.
Although in the metro, we don't know, because you know, now this campaign, they have the billboards saying accident de car. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Il y a comme une action grave voyageur tous les jours, or something like that. And no one's saying, no, you don't take the metro. Seeing these posters, and they're all like, don't run for the train, don't go when the door is closing. I forget, it's not, so the thing, accident grave de voyageur, so everybody thinks it's suicide, but maybe it's not. I
It makes me think of my uncle, who I've never met. So my mother's brother committed suicide when he was 18, around 18. And my mother was here already in France, and he wrote her a letter, which she got much later. Well. Something for the mail, time for the mail to come from the US. And he called his father, my grandfather, to tell him he was going to do it. He shot himself. And it's just what I discovered by chance, because I found that letter when I was about 18 years later. Because my grandmother never, my grandfather died when he was when I was young, and my grandmother never, and my mother never ever talked about family secret.
I guess, or just we're not a family that talks about this kind of stuff, or any kind of suffering, I guess. And it's just what you were saying about consequences and how it affects people's lives. And strangely enough, I can't say it didn't affect their lives. It did. And especially my grandmother, I mean, his her own son. But it's just there. Sometimes you have a way of just continuing, or you just, it's all you have to do anyway. But just how different ways people have of dealing with things, and either you shut it away, you don't think about it, or you take it full on and you grieve your whole life, or you, I don't know, so many ways of just dealing with suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing suffering.
Tu as dit qu'il avait appelé son père pour lui dire, c'est ça?
Qu'il était en train de le faire.
Qu'il était en train.
But what's surprising is maybe the that context, the fact that it was never talked about.
Mm.
I think that's
it's not so unusual, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In situations like that, because it's such a big thing, and like you say, people have different ways of dealing with it, and we don't realize, cross generational too, that how the effects are, even if it's not a big deal, even if it's nothing that jumps out of how you've been affected, but it's affected you in one way or other, even the. They say that things are you even know it even though you didn't know it. In psychoanalysis, they work a lot with that kind of thing. Or, this thing that they call it the family constellation, constellation familiale. It's a thing that was started in Germany. And actually, it was started to deal with families of Nazis or victims in Germany, right? And there are just incredible things that happen in this. It's a group of people. There's a therapist who's doing it, but it's a group of people. You get together, and one person tells their story. Just enough of the story, the family story, so that the therapist can understand it and everybody can get it. And then the person picks people in the group to be, okay, so you, I want you to be my father, I want you to be my cousin, I want you to be my grandfather, I want you to be my sister, stand in the place of these people. And then you actually stand in the room where the person puts you where he thinks you should be. So, okay, I'm going to put my grandfather there, I'm going to put my uncle here, I'm going to put my mother here and my grandmother there, and then you see what happens. And then the therapist will say, we'll ask the person who's being the uncle, what's happening for you, what do you feel right now, or something. And astounding things happen, even though the person has no idea what the uncle was feeling, or no, has no idea what the mother was feeling, or something. They say stuff that's not necessarily related to the story, actual history, but to what's happening in the moment, and it ends up having things to do with the person whose constellation it is. and things come out, you know, secrets, family secrets come out in this kind of thing. It's as if, you know, it's always been there, but it was never came out, stuff like that. It's just another way of saying that, yes, we all deal with it differently, but there are consequences no matter what. You know, I'm sure we all have stories. I hear that story, and I think of when I was 14, hanging around with a bunch of kids in a park, and for weeks, or it seemed like weeks, it was probably only days, but when you're a kid, it seems like a long time. These two guys in the group were saying they were going to do a suicide pact. One of them was going to kill the other and then kill himself. And it wasn't that. It was that they were going to both commit suicide. That was what it was. And we were talking about this for days. And it just seemed like, you know, kind of one of these melodrama things that teenagers talk about and, you know, like draw attention to themselves or something like that. And it so happened we all used to hang out every night in this park in the neighborhood. And so they actually went to another boy's house, and it's because his father had a shotgun, like for hunting or something. And they went and got the gun from this kid's house, and they went off into the woods, and we heard two gunshots. And one of them killed the other one and then killed himself. Just, you know. And you think, 14 years old. If they could only have gotten beyond, I always think this with kids that age, think if they could just get beyond that kind of tortured thing that's happening when you're that age, and or if, you know, they could have just didn't have a gun. You know, it's a problem in America too, you know. There hadn't been a gun. Something else might have happened, you know. But, and I think I've always been affected by that. I didn't really talk about it. I think I probably never even told my parents about it. You know, I didn't. It's just this one. I don't know. You know, I don't know really. Because at that age, I didn't tell my parents anything. You know, and it was probably a crowd of kids I wasn't supposed to be hanging out with anyway, you know, and I probably wasn't supposed to have been in the park that night anyway, or, you know, so who knows. But I bet if I told my mother now, she would say, "What? I didn't know that." She probably knew, because it became an issue in the school and everything, and the family of the boy who had killed the first boy and then killed himself felt terribly guilty that their son had killed this other child, this other boy, you know. And it actually was a strange thing, because the one who did the killing was not the leader. It was actually the other guy who was the one, like, was really the leader of the thing, and I think he convinced the other guy to do it. Whatever. And this is just another example of how you're affected and what happens. You know, I think all of us kids, we were always like, oh. And the family then, of the two boys, and the family of whose gun it was, and the neighbors, whatever, you know. And these are just major things, you know. It can be you just drop your phone in the street and somebody picks it up and gives it to you. Or you lose your case for your glasses and then somebody else finds it and uses it. You don't have it anymore. And it can be anything. It is anything. It is everything.
You should wouldn't try to always think of the repercussions of what your action should be always being.
Well, it's not that we think about it, it's that we are aware that there are consequences. So we don't ignore that there are consequences to what we're doing, but we're not at the same time, we can't possibly know the consequences. So we can see, you know, okay, I hold the flowers down here because I know if I hold them up here like this, it's going to be in everybody's face and there's no room then for people. You know, in the bus, I have to hold it here, right? So there's consequences to if I hold the flowers here or if I hold them here. I didn't know that they were going to be scratching that woman's leg and she was going to think it was a bug. But I was aware that there were consequences to how I held the flowers. You know, it's just, you're aware of the situation you're in, you're paying attention, you're focusing on something bigger than just you. And that's how you become aware of the consequences, because then you see the effects of things around you. You know, when you're riding your bicycle in the city, you're aware of the consequences of things too. You know, if you pull out in front of a car, you're aware that there's going to be a consequence of that, so you don't do that. If you go through the red light, you know there's a consequence. If you don't wear your coat in the rain, you know there's a consequence. If you do wear it, there's a consequence.
Il y a le suicide de quelqu'un qui m'a affecté à deux niveaux. Quand Elisa était à la maternelle, donc elle avait 5 ans, 4 ans, 5 ans, et elle avait un très très bon copain. Pour son anniversaire, elle l'avait invité, le père était venu, il avait vu des bouquins d'hébreu dans ma bibliothèque, et à chaque fois il essayait de me parler, de se rapprocher. Et à un certain moment, j'ai cru qu'il me draguait et j'ai mis des distances. Et puis, au fil des mois, j'ai vu cet homme qui allait de plus en plus mal. Et j'essayais de me rapprocher de lui, de lui parler, de voir un peu. Et là, c'était impossible. Il était vraiment un mur. Et un jour, il s'est jeté sous le RER de la Varenne. Et donc, la mère nous a demandé de garder le petit garçon pendant un peu, enfin, le temps que... J'ai une d'ailleurs quand j'en parle. Et ce petit garçon, évidemment, enfin je dis évidemment, non, pas évidemment, malheureusement, enfin je sais pas. La mère lui a dit, et elle a dit à tout le monde d'ailleurs, y compris à moi, j'ai su la vérité beaucoup plus tard par la grand-mère de ce petit garçon. Mais beaucoup plus tard, mais sur le moment, on m'a dit qu'il avait une crise cardiaque, brutalement. Et ce petit garçon à la maison, à un moment, a dessiner un train qui tournait et il me dit mon papa il est mort parce que son cœur il était cassé. Et je sais pas si j'ai essayé de le faire parler un peu, enfin c'est tout ce dont je me souviens. Et si il m'a dit oui, et son cœur, il était cassé parce que papa et maman, ils se sont disputés très très fort hier soir et ça a cassé le cœur de mon papa. Et puis voilà, et un an ou deux ans après, j'ai su qu'il s'était suicidé. Et donc moi, je me suis vraiment sentie très très affectée à deux niveaux, parce que la première, cet homme était juif, mais... Un juif, ses parents jamais ne lui avaient dit qu'il était juif, jamais ne lui avaient parlé de son judaïsme. Et je pense qu'il essayait par là d'essayer de, enfin, par mon biais, d'essayer de renouer un peu avec ça. Mais c'était un petit peu, enfin, bon, j'étais certainement aussi à un autre niveau que maintenant, donc j'ai juste cru qu'il me draguait. Et, surtout qu'il était plutôt bel homme et il jouait de... très extraverti, très... Donc je me sentais coupable quand même de rien avoir vu, de rien avoir pu faire quand j'ai vu qu'il allait pas bien, que je le croisais à la sortie de l'école. Et puis par ce petit garçon que j'aimais beaucoup, que je voyais très souvent, qui venait à la maison, Elisa allait chez lui. Bon, j'ai parlé longtemps. Et de façon inconsciente, combien, comment il s'appelait ce petit garçon, j'ai oublié, mais comment de façon inconsciente, il savait tout, il avait dessiné un train, mais il n'a pas su me dire pourquoi il avait dessiné un train, mais il a dessiné un train et il me dit mon papa est mort parce que ma maman lui a cassé son cœur.
But who created this story that he had a heart attack?
La mère, the mother.
And that's interesting too, that she should tell that story.
Comment?
That she should invent that.
Ben oui, pour moi. Ben, je pense qu'elle devait culpabiliser quand même.
I have a grandfather who killed himself long before I was born. So I was never really like directly affected by the story, but I guess I couldn't say how I was affected. But of course, I mean, my father must have been. I know he has been strongly, but I wasn't there at the time. He never really speaks about that or about his father either. The story that runs in the family is that it was basically my grandmother's fault. It was really hard to be around her. She was making everyone around miserable, and apparently that was a family thing. Like her sisters and mothers were like that too. And I've heard all kinds of stories about that part of the family, and it seems when I hear those stories, it seems like it must have been hell to live with those people. I wondered how it must have been for my grandfather to get to the point where if I believe the story that has been told to me, to come to the point that you feel like so something is so wrong about life, and maybe life with another person or with the person you are with, that you decide to kill yourself. I can't really imagine that. I can't imagine what he's been through, and I've been wondering and thinking about it, and I don't really know how much I can believe the story that has been told to me, because it's been told as if he had been like a victim of my grandmother's, and I doubt things are that or could be that simple. It sounds to me like he could have left. He could have said, if really the reason of him committed suicide was that his life was miserable because of his
wife.
Then at that time my father was about 25, he had left the home when he was 16, so, and he had he was married with a child. So my grandfather didn't have responsibilities. He could have left, but somehow he couldn't. I don't know why he couldn't or what really happened. And I suppose that my grandmother after that. I don't know if anybody told her that directly that they thought she was responsible for it, but I guess even if not, it must have been terrible for her too, to probably feel like people were thinking that it was her fault. It really just plays in complicated ways. It's a strong event and effects. It's really just complex and complicated. I guess you can't really understand all the ways in which it affects everything and everyone around.
No, and it's the same for every event, every action. There's no way to know. We say that it's the karma is so close. You are your karma, and it's so vast that you can't possibly perceive it. You know, so it's not necessarily. Here we're talking about these tragic events, but it can also be happy events. You know, any event. Can be someone, you know, someone meeting someone and falling in love. Well, then, wow! Then there's all these consequences of that. We are all here, more or less, because two people met and fell in love, right? So that's a huge consequence, you know, that we don't really think about so much. But that too is a consequence. And these are just the really big ones. These are just like the tips of the icebergs, the emergent ones, the one most of the consequences we don't see, we're not aware of.
Mm. Si je reviens à ce qui me touchait le plus quand tu parlais tout à l'heure, c'est que je crois que chacun on a en soi ces impulsions possibles, cette tendance vers la mort et puis cette tendance vers la vie. Et ce qui me touchait le plus, c'était que que pour certaines personnes, c'était pas la force de vie qui était la plus forte, mais que c'était la force de mort qui l'emportait. Et c'est ça, ça me touchait vraiment très fort quand tu parlais.
And that's like when you were saying that it was that person who committed suicide in the metro. It was her path. And I was thinking the same about my grandfather. It was his path, and. And that, to think that, changes the perspective, because it's not, because maybe you could say it like this, like I was saying, he could have left, but that was his path. He somehow, I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but I could say he chose this path. And that changes the perspective, because he's not exactly a victim anymore, and it makes everything more complex. Like my grandmother is not the bad person who did that. She was probably suffering a lot too. Yeah, say that it was his path. That is different from saying he was a victim and she was like.
Or we should have stopped him, or something.
Well, that's really difficult too, because, like for my father, for example, to say that it was his path, I imagine that that would mean. To accept it, there was something else I had in mind. That, I lost it. did you say just before?
This is bad from the, that because it is a question of choice, you know, it really is. To choose that moment to die. We can judge it, but who are we to judge? Who are we really to judge? It's like, I don't want somebody to tell me what I should wear at the beach. There's all this thing about you can't wear the bikini and everything. Well, I don't want somebody to tell me what kind of bathing suit I can wear or not. I also don't want someone to tell me how I can die. The thing is, everyone lives and dies in their way. It's a different thing, of course, if you're murdered. But again, that too is your path. That's what happens. Karmically, that's what came. That's what arose. Or if you're in an accident or something, that's what it is.
It seems that, assuming there is suffering in a situation like that, and it can take many forms. It can be suffering about different things. It seems like that's the main thing. It's not so much what the person does, the person kills herself or not, or. It should have been stopped, or it should have been avoided. It seems like the main thing is that there was suffering there. That's probably the only thing that should have been addressed, if possible. It's not so much if the person kills herself. It might seem, because the tendency, someone kills herself, and it should have been avoided. Maybe it's not so much that. Maybe the most important is that there was suffering there, and it could have been addressed. Someone, but the person didn't have anyone to talk with, or no one was available, or whatever.
Or didn't want to.
Yeah. Many possibilities. But that's, to me, it seems like that's the main thing. It's like nothing else matters. It's what the person does, what happens. It doesn't seem so important. Maybe it's the path, it's the person's path. But there was suffering, and it seems like that's the only thing that matters.
And there's suffering even when it doesn't take that extreme form. It's like the story I tell of seeing all these people in the commuter train looking uncomfortable, looking like they were suffering, and I thought their clothes didn't fit right, or something like that. But that's not what it was.
J'ai pas compris de qui tu as parlé là.
Je raconte l'histoire que dans un train bondé, j'ai regardé autour de moi et j'ai l'impression que tout le monde était pas confortable, mal à l'aise.
C'est une histoire que tu as déjà racontée.
Oui.
We have that talk on the Portuguese blog.
Because that's, and it had nothing to do with committing suicide or it was just what I was aware of in that moment, because I was open to something beyond myself and my ways of seeing things, was this. The basic, what the Buddha called suffering, but the basic discomforts of living, and of being. And I was interpreting it as, their clothes don't fit, or it's bad material, and it itches, like when you have a tag back there, it's itching and annoying, or the shoes don't fit right, or you have a blister or something. It wasn't any of that, though. I realized. I think in the moment I realized it, but I didn't get it, and so I just turned back and started joking with my friends again, but later I realized what that was. And then that's every moment. It doesn't have to be an extreme situation. How are we doing with time here?
It's 10 to 10.
Okay, so we should probably stop here. Thank you.